the Crypt.
Hey everyone, Mackenzie Lambert here, your host for Megan the Movies. Today is going to be a fun one. We are going to take a look at the big screen offering for horror's most beloved comic series, Tales from the Crypt. We'll start off with a pair of anthology films produced by Amicus Studios, 1972's Tales from the Crypt, and the 1973 follow-up, The Vault of Horror. Those will be followed up by the trilogy of Demonite, Bordello of Blood, and Ritual. Before we look at the Amicus productions, we need to go through the series of events that led these American horror comics to the renowned British movie studio. We need to go all the way back to 1953. At the time, 25% of all comics published in America were horror-related titles. In 1954, the shit hit the fan. Frederick Wertheim's Seduction of the Innocent proposed that comics were responsible for the rise of juvenile delinquency. Some of the claims made by Wertheim included: Wonder Woman was strong and independent, so therefore she was a lesbian. Superman was an un-American fascist, and Batman and Robin promoted homosexuality. September of 1954 had the creation of the Comics Code Authority. Under the code, comics were not allowed to do any of the following: share unique details and methods of crime, excessive violence, gory or gruesome details, depravity and lust, and Satanism. All the fun stuff. The response to this was the rise of horror magazines. Why magazines? Because they were seen as catering to an older, more mature, and less impressionable demographic. Hence why Mad Magazine was a comedy magazine and not a comedy comic book. Now we go across the pond to the UK. Horror comics were on the rise in post-World War II Britain, mostly as reprints of American titles. Much like in America, they were the subject of moral hysteria. The British Parliament passed the Children and Young Persons Harmful Publications Act of 1955. Section 1 of this legislation applied to, and I quote, any book, magazine, or other like work which of its kind is likely to fall into the hands of children or young persons and consists wholly or mainly of stories told in pictures, with or without the addition of written matter, being the stories portraying A, the commissions of crimes, B, acts of violence or cruelty, or C, incidents of a repulsive or horrible nature, in such a way that the work as a whole would tend to corrupt a child or young person into whose hands it might fall. Now, what the heck does all of that mean? Basically, any visual reading material can be considered contraband if it is of a horrific or brutal nature. Sound familiar, doesn't it? A young person was defined as anyone under the age of 18. In other words, it was the British version of the Comics Code Authority. Section 2 laid out the consequences. It was a criminal offense to print, publish, produce, or to possess one for the purpose of selling or handing out. Those found guilty of violating the law were imprisoned for up to 4 months and paid a £1,000 fine. Now remember, this is £1,000 in 1955. If you adjust for inflation, you're looking at £25,200. Convert that to American currency, and that is over $33,000. The last case to be prosecuted under this law was in 1982, which is around the time the Video Nasties controversy started to dominate the headlines. If you missed out on the Nasties episode, it was in the immediate episode previous to the one you're listening to now. Now let's jump to Amicus Studios. They were the major competition for another British horror studio, Hammer Films. But Amicus started out with non-horror titles. Its Trad Dad and Just for Fun were similar to the youth films of America, young actors and the top British music talent rebelling against the square authority figures.
Hi there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the show. This is Alan Freeman inviting you to see the most exciting pop musical ever made.
Just for fun.
It all began when the teenagers got the votes and decided to use it to vote for themselves.
How silly can kids get
to think they could take over the country?
what if they win?
And from then on, it was the craziest campaign you've ever seen.
They also produced the non-canon films for Doctor Who, with Peter Cushing as the Doctor. Danger Route was their attempt at a James Bond film. Interesting choice, considering Johnson was Dr. No director's Terrence Howard's top pick to actually play Bond. Johnson turned down the role, I'm sure much to his regret. 1965's Dr. Terror's House of Horrors was the first anthology film produced by Amicus. Subsequent releases include The Torture Garden, The House That Dripped Blood, the aforementioned Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, Asylum, and From Beyond the Grave. This is what would separate Amicus Studios from Hammer. Hammer specialized in erotic, violent updates of the classic monsters, Frankenstein, Dracula, The Wolfman, The Mummy. Amicus specialized in films of vignettes connected by a framing device, known as the portmanteau films. So, how do these stories, from horror comics deemed contraband in 1955, manage to maintain a presence in the UK long enough to become anthology films almost 20 years later? Surprisingly simple, actually. Short story collections. As you can heard from the legislation, it only pertains to stories told in pictures, but not in prose literature. These gruesome stories were adapted into print stories and sold in literary anthologies. That's how they were able to work around the Children and Young Persons Harmful Publications Act. Amicus producer Milton Subotsky was given these anthologies, and thus the film adaptations of Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror came to be. Tales from the Crypt opens with a group of tourists getting lost in catacombs. They find a passage where they encounter the Crypt Keeper. Each of the tourists have a story connected to them. All Through the House centers on a scheming wife who kills her husband the same night a maniac dressed as Santa Claus is on the loose. Reflection of Death puts an unfaithful husband in a bizarre situation of everyone being afraid of him. Poetic Justice has an old, timid man that is countlessly bullied by his yuppie neighbors. Wish You Were Here is a variation of The Monkey's Paw, with a wealthy couple making wishes that end up costing them dearly. And then there's Blind Alleys, which has a home for the blind rebelling against their militant manager. The story themselves are well-paced and make the most of the vignette format. All Through the House, Poetic Justice, and Blind Alleys stand out as the strongest stories. Tales from the Crypt takes itself seriously for the most part, despite the hints of black humor that were a hallmark of the comic series. The bottleneck chaos of a wife murdering her husband while being stalked by a maniac is much easier to stand while Christmas music is playing in the background. A nice audiovisual dichotomy. For a PG film, there are some gruesome moments. The beating heart gift-wrapped, some embalmed intestines, a disembodied hand, and some of the worst-looking fake blood you'll ever see. Director Freddie Francis got his start under Hammer Studios before becoming a regular for Amicus. He was at the helm for Dr. Terror's House of Horrors before being tasked with Tales from the Crypt. He also made a name for himself as a cinematographer. David Lynch's Dune and Martin Scorsese's remake of Cape Fear stand out of that section of his career. Subotsky himself wrote the script. However, William Gaines, the owner of EC Comics, had final say on the script. Sir Ralph Richardson deadpans it as the Crypt Keeper. He plays the role straight. Those used to John Cassier as the Crypt Keeper will be thrown off by Richardson's more subdued take on the character. Peter Cushing gives the best performance of the whole film as Arthur Grimsdyke. He has a warmth and a genuine sincerity to his character. Just before filming, Cushing's wife Helen passed on, and his grief added much to his performance. This turn made me wish that Cushing dabbled more in dramatic roles. Your heart really goes out to the Grimsdyke character. He's a simple dustman, which is English slang for a garbage man, who is the target of harassment by his neighbors. His dogs are taken away, he loses his job, he's slandered as a filthy old man, even insinuated that he's a pedophile for showing kindness towards the neighborhood children. Other highlights of the cast include Joan Collins, Ian Hendry from Theater of Blood, Richard Green from the Christopher Lee Fu Manchu films, Patrick McGee from A Clockwork Orange, and Nigel Patrick. Overall, Tales from the Crypt is an effective collection of stories elevated by strong performances and bringing a sense of seriousness to the absurdity within these stories. Begins with a group of men in a room with no way to get out. They each have a seat and begin to talk about nightmares they have on a frequent basis. These nightmares transition to the stories that make up the film. Midnight Mess has a brother murder his sister, but soon he finds out he's in a town full of vampires. The Neat Job deals with a neat freak husband testing the patience of his wife. This Trick'll Kill You has a husband and wife magician team steal a magic trick that they regret stealing in the end. Bargain in Death warns of the dangers of trying to commit insurance fraud. And lastly, Drawn and Quartered focuses on an artist who has his hand enchanted by voodoo to take revenge on his patrons. Compared to the previous film, The Vault of Horror plays with its tone. A story like Midnight Mess or The Neat Job play up the dark humor overtly, while this Trick'll Kill You and Drawn and Quartered take themselves seriously for the most part. This will throw off members of the audience looking for a consistent tone for all the stories. If you're looking to buy this on DVD, please, please, please avoid the Midnight Madness double feature with Tales from the Crypt. I believe that was from MGM. This version of the film is censored. The shot of a tap being put into the neck of David Massey is censored with just a huge black block in the middle of the screen, and the hammer into the head of Terry Thomas is freeze-framed. Skip this version and go with the Scream Factory release instead. Similar to Freddy Francis, Vault of Horror director Roy Ward Baker dipped his foot into horror with Hammer before moving to Amicus. For Baker, he was really only known as a director. Sapkowski wrote the script. Oddly enough, the stories for this film didn't come from the Vault of Horror series. With the exception of Neat Job, all of the stories are Tales from the Crypt. The Neat Job was taken from Shock Suspense stories. This film features its share of star power, but none of the performances come close to matching Cushing as Grimsdyke. Terry Thomas is amusing as the clean freak husband. Tom Baker and his British afro manages to give off a creepy vibe as the vengeful artist. There's Denholm Elliott, Curd Jurgens, and Anna Massey that stand out among the cast. It's a solid film, enjoyable in its own right, makes a fine double feature with Tales from the Crypt. If you can find the Scream Factory version, it's well worth it. Starts off with a high-speed pursuit that ends in a violent crash. Apparently, only one man survives, the man named Breaker. He makes his way to a hotel that was renovated from the ruins of a church. He plans to stay the night, but head out in the morning. The police investigate the crash and encounter the other person involved. He has no name other than the collector. Breaker has something he wants, and he's been pursuing him for a long time. Eventually, the collector catches up with Breaker, and literally all hell breaks loose. Breaker manages to use a key-shaped object to keep the collector at bay. In response, the collector uses his own blood to summon demons. If the demons get their hands on the key, it could mean the end of the world as we know it. Tales from the Crypt presents Demonite was made in response to the beloved HBO series based on the EC horror comics. With the show being a success on both HBO and in syndication, a movie was a no-brainer. Three films were planned, with Demonite being the first because it followed the structure of the TV show so closely, with Crypt Keeper host segments opening and closing the film. Demonite itself was a homage to the horror genre. The standoff scenario recalls Romero's Night of the Living Dead and John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13. The demons seem like they were straight out of the Lamberto Bava films. The heavy metal rock aesthetic of the soundtrack is in the vein of 80s Dario Argento. Not to spoil anything, but this is the best of the three films that make up the Tales from the Crypt trilogy. I remember seeing this in theaters when it was released in 1994, much to the shock of my fellow Catholic school classmates. People were screaming, laughing. It was a fun time. When I saw a special screening of it last year, people didn't respond to the film as wildly as the 1994 audience. Just loosen up, everybody. Director Ernest Dickerson has an accomplished career as a director of television and film. He worked frequently as a cinematographer for Spike Lee. TV credits include House of Cards, The Wire, Dexter, The Walking Dead, and Burn Notice. Film highlights range from Surviving the Game, Bulletproof, and Bones. John Cassier works his magic as the Crypt Keeper. For many of my generation, he was our first horror host. He was our Sven Gulli. He was our Zachary. He was our Bob Wilkins. This was before Monster Vision introduced us to Joe Bob Briggs. Cassier not only voiced the Crypt Keeper, but he was the first one to give Deadpool a voice for the video game X-Men Legends 2 Rise of Apocalypse. With all due respect to Nolan North and Ryan Reynolds, Cassier is my Deadpool. Having had a chance to meet him in person, he is one of the most laid-back, cool people. Billy Zane steals the movie. As the collector, he is an absolute joy. He's manic, he can be charming, evil, and hilarious. He keeps the viewer on their toes because at any moment he could change. I swear I could listen to this one clip of him all day.
You fucking ho-dunk, po-dunk, well then there, motherfuckers!
It warms my heart when an actor from my hometown makes it big. Hats off to William Sadler, who plays Breaker. Sadler would be a regular fixture for Tales from the Crypt, playing the Grim Reaper on the 1994 episode The Assassin, as well as the very first Air episode, The Man Who Was Death. He played the mummy in Bordello of Blood, which was just essentially a repeat of his performance on The Assassin. He's clearly a favorite of Darabont, having appeared in Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, and The Mist. He was the president in Iron Man 3. Keep up the good work, Mr. Sadler. The Queen City is proud of you. Jada Pinkett Smith plays Geraldine, who turns out to be the final girl. Further evidence of horror's respect for women. She's tough, but collected when the situation gets hairy. My favorite work of hers would have to be The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy. Lately, she's been killing it on Gotham. Rounding out the cast, you have CCH Pounder, Thomas Hayden Church, B-movie great, the late Dick Miller, and Roger Rabbit himself, Charles Fleischer. John Larroquette has a funny cameo in the opening. Tales from the Crypt presents Demonite is an enjoyable monster romp that fits the spirit of the source material. Funny, scary, and it's just a great movie with some brews and friends. Can I just say now that this is the best movie of the bunch that I'm reviewing? Bordello of Blood introduces us to explorer Vincent Prather, searching for the tomb of the vampiress Lilith. Vincent is in possession of her heart in four separate pieces. Once the pieces are together, the heart beats and can resurrect its host. He finds her body and brings her back to life, using the key from Demonite to have control over her. Caleb and Catherine are siblings who are in different places in their lives. Catherine is a Christian, sanctimonious woman, while Caleb is still sowing his wild oats. One night after a nasty argument, Caleb leaves to hang out with his friends. Caleb ends up at the brothel, going missing shortly after. The police are unable to find anything. Desperate, Catherine goes to private investigator Rafe Gutman. Gutman's findings have the brothel being fronted by a funeral home, and the brothel is connected to Reverend Current, who is the boss of Catherine. Things get out of hand to the point where Current and Gutman have to team up to stop Lilith once and for all. Bordello of Blood is a major transition from Demonite. The film has more of an emphasis on comedy than it does horror. Demonite used humor to break the tension and for needed moments of levity. In Bordello of Blood, there is little to no sense of tension or danger for both Rafe or Catherine. The story of Bordello of Blood was originally written by the duo of Bob Gale and Robert Zemeckis back in the 1970s. Those surprised by the pair's early career in exploitation shouldn't be. One of their early credits was the Headless Biker episode for the original Kojak the Night Stalker with Darren McGavin. The script of the story for Bordello of Blood went unproduced. The story was revisited and utilized for the second film of the Tales from the Crypt trilogy, After Demon Night. The soundtrack this time around is a mix of rock, metal, and glam. It's all over the place. At least with Demonite, there was a common aesthetic. Here you have Sweet, Thin Lizzy, Free, The Scorpions, Humble Pie, and Anthrax. To the film's credit, Sweet's ballroom blitz is effectively used during the film's action sequence. Director Gilbert Adler was also a showrunner for the HBO Tales from the Crypt series. He's also been a producer for films like Ghost Ship, Superman Returns, and Dylan Dog, Dead of Night. Yet, despite his experience as showrunner, Bordello of Blood hardly feels like an episode of the series. Dennis Miller as Gutman is a mixed bag. No doubt his casting at the time was due to his successful late-night show on HBO, on the same channel as Tales from the Crypt.
Step outside. You know, Zeke, not right now. Just not in the mood for a blowjob. Hey, I got a rock, kids.
Well, Hopalong chiming in over there.
I might be, but want to throw a Bic lighter on that burger first? For Christ's sake, it's still mooing. Hey, could you possibly get just a little bit of that fucking stew inside your head? Huh? Can we shoot for that?
He's got the one-liners, but the little dread or concern for the horror shenanigans makes the film less scary. He was the precursor to one of contemporary horror's biggest issues. The characters are too snarky or sarcastic towards the horror they are experiencing. If the characters aren't scared, then why should the audience be scared? Erica Eleniak is fine as Catherine. She plays up the modest church lady attitude one would expect from an employee of a mega church evangelist. But she goes through a change over the course of the film, loosening up. Angie Everhart as Lilith is a sight for sore eyes. She is a beaut. She had a lot of fun in the role of Lilith, just clearly hamming it up. Chris Sarandon, Corey Feldman, and Phil Fondacaro round out the supporting cast. Bordello of Blood is fine. It's a carefree offering when it comes to Tales from the Crypt films. Yet, compared to Demonite as well as the original anthology films, it's second from the bottom, which takes us to... Ritual focuses on Dr. Alice Dodgson, who is fired from her hospital after being involved in the death of a patient. She takes up a job as a nurse for a patient in Jamaica, Wesley Claiborne. It is believed he is suffering from brain inflammation, but others think it's voodoo. The previous caregiver, Dr. Winsford, died under suspicious circumstances. Ritual was a film produced in 2002, 6 years after both Tales from the Crypt had been canceled and Bordello of Blood. Bordello of Blood performed poorly at the box office, so references to Tales from the Crypt were minimal in Ritual, hence why the Crypt Keeper segment feels out of place for this film. Yet, Ritual wasn't actually released in America until 2006. The introduction with the Crypt Keeper feels tacked on, like an afterthought. The stiffness of the Crypt Keeper puppet gives this away, as it lacks the fluidity of the puppet from the TV series or from the previous films. Interesting enough, Ritual is based on the RKO classic, I Walked with a Zombie. It has similar plot beats, but with a gender swap of the patient the main character is looking after. The film even uses the classic RKO film's intro from the 1930s and 40s. Ritual stands out as the weakest offering of the Tales from the Crypt films. For a series known for campy horror, Ritual takes itself way too seriously for the franchise. Everyone plays the horror straight. This is too far in the opposite direction from Bordello of Blood, completely missing the happy medium that was Demon Knight. Director Avi Nasir made a competently executed film. It's not flashy or particularly engaging, but he beautifully captures the Jamaican terrain, showing the calm but unsettling silence of the outskirts. Jennifer Grey, Daniel LaPane, and Kristen Wilson are fine in the leads, but are overshadowed. Eric Avari makes the most of his limited screen time as Dr. Winsford. Tim Curry is criminally underutilized here. He was Dr. Frankenfurter. He was King Chicken and Duckman. He was Pennywise the Clown. Here you have this walking embodiment of charm and charisma, and you waste him in a dull role. Even more depressing, considering at the 1994 Emmys, Curry was nominated for Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama Series for his episode, Death of Some Salesman, where he played three different characters. And these three characters often share the same screen with one another, so here you have Tim Curry acting with himself. It really is just an amazing sight to behold. And yet, none of this movie is able to capture some of that lightning charisma that Curry had. There's not really a lot to say about Ritual. It's not an interesting film, and it's probably the weakest of the Tales from the Crypt trilogy. Alright, here's the official Mech in the Movies rankings for the Tales from the Crypt films. Number 5, Ritual. Number 4, Bordello of Blood. Number 3, Vault of Horror from 1973. Number 2, Tales from the Crypt from 1972. And number 1, it had to be Tales from the Crypt Presents Demon Knight. And that finishes this episode of Mech in the Movies. Next week, I have a special episode I'm putting up that I think you'll enjoy. And then on April 8th, I'll be taking a look at films from the directorial duo of Jean-Pierre Jeunet and Marc Caro. We're going French on the 8th, and I'm looking forward to digging into their films. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to give it a like and leave a comment. Want to stay on top of future episodes? Go ahead and follow me on Podomatic, or you can subscribe to me on my other outlets. I'm on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. You can reach out to me via Gmail. I have a PayPal for those who wish to give a one-time donation to the program. Everything is in the description. Until next time, this is Mackenzie Lambert for Mech in the Movies. Take care, folks.
Next, perhaps you.